countering the Great Resignation through distance learning administration, but I'm not going to get into, like, let's talk what the Great Resignation is. I'm not going to do a primer on that, whether you like Great Resignation, Great Reshuffling, Great Reprioritization, Great Realignment, whatever. I'm trusting that you are following. Sorry, now I'm going to tackle the servers. I'm so sorry if you never get your food and if we have to rush somebody to the hospital. It's going to be sad for everybody. They should never have let that guy have a wireless microphone. So I'm not going to do that kind of a primer. But I am going to talk a little bit about the implications of the Great Resignation and what we might do as a community to counter that. There's a lot going on in our distance learning work right now. There's a lot of flux. We, I think, are challenged, right, to build upon our successful past pre-pandemic and then try to apply lessons learned during remote instruction and our ongoing pandemic response. How do we integrate those two things to move forward? That's challenging. Gosh, there's modality flux. There's what we expect of quality flux. There's all kinds of things. And then on top of that, there is the so-called Great Resignation, where we can be losing trusted colleagues. I'll go so far as to say this issue might be the most challenging for our field. Because how do you keep going in distance learning at all if you're having to reinvent the wheel, right? If you have to start all over, if you've lost the seasoned expertise and experience, how do you do that, right? So we're going to talk a little bit about mitigating that. I just want to leave plant some seeds, leave some principles behind for you, give you some concrete examples. I hope it'll give you something to think about. And if we have a little time, we can interact. I'd love to hear what you're thinking in response, hear what you're facing in your particular situations in your home institutions. But you know what? If we don't have time, I'm going to give you my contact info at the end, and genuinely, please reach out. If you just want to follow up and you want to have a conversation, exchange an email, kick some ideas around, I seriously invite you to do that. And, I should have said this at the beginning, and I'll say it now. If you're here, it is 99.99999% certain that you are a leader in our field. No matter what your title, no matter what your official role, you're a leader. And I just want to say thank you, because you've been going through a lot. Our field has been going through a lot for more than 2 years. So thank you all for keeping us afloat. Thank you for doing the work that you do every day. Don't give up. So that's my thing. Now, my invitation to you is to think along with me about how we can counter the Great Resignation. I'm going to give you a slide link, and I'm going to tell you two stories, and then we're going to talk about the principles. So you'll be out of here in about 2.25 hours, I think, is going to be that was the agreed upon, Janet, right? Okay, 1.5 hours, and you're out of here, top. So we'll do that. All right, so the slide link is using the Bitly shortening service, bit.ly, and that is bit.ly/Thompson_DLA22. I'll give it to you again at the end so you can decide whether you want them then or not. There's not a whole lot of content in these slides. They're just organizing devices, but you might like the links at the end. All right, two quick anecdotes. One really is a secondhand anecdote, and one is a personal anecdote, just to kind of set the stage a wee bit. So I've been very fortunate, along with Barbara Truman, who is a beloved, dear colleague who, as Janet said, we lost last year. I've been very fortunate to work with a lot of really smart, wise, seasoned people in my I think in about 2 weeks, it'll be 24 years I've been at UCF. And two of these folks, as it turns out, both worked in the same academic department at UCF in the 70s. And I've been struck by the fact that independent, probably within the first 10 years of my working at UCF, independently of each other, they both told me an almost identical story, which was interesting. And the story had to, just a brief little anecdote, and I don't know what brought it up in either of the two cases, but I remember distinctly talking to one of them, and then sometime later I'm talking to another one. They told me a very similar story. I'm like, I think I've heard this story before. And it had to do with their department chair. And they each said, this must have been something this department chair did as like onboarding or something with like new faculty. So each of them said that they had a meeting with this department chair, and they're sitting there across his desk. And he said, he called him by name and said, like, Thompson, imagine there's a container of water sitting here on my desk. And you're like, okay, where are we going with this? And imagine you roll up your sleeve and stick your arm in that bucket, pull it back out again. That's about as much difference as you're going to make here to this university when you leave. And I thought, independently, two of these guys, like 20 years later, told me that story. So I think it probably really happened, and it probably happened regularly, I'm guessing. And I have to assume that he had good intentions, that he was trying to share some bit of wisdom and bring some kind of perspective. But whoever said, ouch, yes, right? That, ooh, no, okay. So hold that thought. That's anecdote number one. Anecdote number two, if you look at this, not only is this a container of water, it reminds me of a fishbowl, which reminds me of a story. When I was an undergraduate in my college, there was an office that we referred to as the fishbowl. And it was funny. I was looking here back at the back of the dining room over over to the side, closer to the pool. There's this little private dining area there, that sun porch dining area. It's lovely. But there are two entrances, one on the left, one on the right. And the front of that reminds me a lot of the fishbowl. If you would just imagine instead of a fireplace, there's just a floor-to-ceiling clear window. Inside that area in my undergraduate times, there was a wall-to-wall counter. And behind that counter was the most valuable person in my whole college, and her name was Patty Harrington. Patty knew everything. Maybe you have a person like that at your institution and in your academic areas. Patty, you know, it kind of had command central. It was just Patty and a couple of student assistants. And you know, this is in the ancient days when we had paper was our means of record keeping. So they had these things called like filing cabinets and things like that. It's from antiquity. You take a history class, you'll learn about it. But Patty knew everything, and so there was so much paper that you had to get checked off as an undergraduate student, and you didn't really know. And do I take this class or do I not take this class? And sooner or later you had to figure out what signature you needed on what form and what order to, you know, don't pass go, don't collect $200. And so inevitably there's a line outside the left side of the door, right? And then you would wait your turn and you would see Patty and she would solve all your problems. She might disappear back behind there and then she'd come back out and she would sign something and tell you what to do and you'd leave and then the line would go along. And I remember her vividly from my 27 years as an undergraduate. That's not true. I was only there 6 and a half, but it just seemed like 27. But I'd still be there today if my wife would let me. But she said, no, you have to grow up and get a job. Patty, I think about often as like such a valuable person. I looked her up a little bit, did a little cyber stalking. Like she retired and she's stayed active in the community doing a few things quietly. But I think, what a valuable person. And so I think, you know, we all know that the most expensive budget item in any budget is what? Personnel, that's exactly right. Salaries. Salaries, benefits, even ancillary, like professional development, all those things taken as a whole, that is your biggest thing. But it's more than that. People matter. Not just collectively, but people matter as individual persons, right? And if you don't remember anything else that we talk about today, remember that people matter. And that is the way that we work on countering the Great Resignation, in my opinion, in our field. So I just have three little ideas to leave you with, three little thoughts, and I'll try to give you some concrete examples of each of them. So you can think of these as steps if you want to, I guess. The first principle is a two-parter, kind of a two-step, A side and a B side. They go together. Humanize and empathize. Those are two distinct things. They're related, but they're distinct. Humanize, like think about the fact that people matter, right? People are the work before you can even talk about any other work. But it's not enough to just recognize the utility of people. It's not enough to recognize that these are biological components of your cog and gear machinery, right? We also need to empathize with our colleagues. Take the time to know their individual situations. Before we do anything else, there's that. And that takes time. I try to make this a regular part of my practice, investing time. Notice, I mean, we're going to talk about other, more direct things about the Great Resignation and countering that in a second. But I start with this because this is the sine qua non. This is the baseline. If we're not doing this, if we're not humanizing and empathizing with our people, we might as well hang it up and go home. Because we have to know our colleagues. We have to know our friends that we work with, so that can shape our actions. It can shape our priorities. So I try to make this a part of my practice. My colleague Charlene is here. Where's Charlene? She's around here somewhere. So you keep me honest, Charlene. Charlene's at UCF, our Director of Instructional Design for the Center for Distributed Learning. And I try really hard to have 30 minutes with every single person in our 100-member organization throughout the year. If I maintain a pace of 1.5 of those meetings per week, then I can get through everybody in a year. It doesn't always work. There was a pandemic. It disrupted things. I'm going to use that as a crutch for as long as I can. But we work at it, and I have something called Coffee with Kelvin, 30 minutes with person. I say, you can ask me anything you want to ask me. Tell me anything you want to tell me. If you sit there, I'm just going to start asking you questions. And I said, to everyone, I say, there's no agenda other than just having some time together. And I like to think as a result that maybe we pass each other in the hallway, we'll be a little bit more inclined to nod at each other. If you need something, you'll be a little bit more willing to come see me. If I need something, I'll be a little bit more willing to come see you, and so forth. Right? So those are the kinds of things. We have specific efforts that we make to hear people. When things go wrong, we had some people leave in our development team about a year ago. Two real key people. We stepped back and I interviewed every single team member who was left behind. We did a retreat. We talked. I said up front that this is going to take a little while to respond and decide where to go next, rather than just let's seek to rehire. We first said, what's our situation? What do we need to do? And one of the things that they said was, hey, we're developers. We're not getting paid anything, what we're worth. Like, well, we're never going to be able to compete with industry. But okay, ouch, point well taken. So we stepped back and said, okay, what can we do? And we took on an effort to catch up a bit. We reclassified positions and brought about increases to try to retain those folks. But it was because we listened. I was just thanked by one of those developers. We've done a couple of other things since then. I was thanked like 2 weeks ago. I should probably say thank you for doing that. And I said, well, hey, thank you for speaking up and telling us what the needs are, right? I'm sorry that we missed it the first time, right? So that's important, humanizing and empathizing as a baseline. So again, just to hit this, it's about people and it's about time. It's about the work, but it's only about the work in so much as you can't do the work without the people, and you can't do that unless you invest the time in the people. Second thing, we got to strategize, right? I said at the beginning that I'm trusting that you're paying attention to the trends, the great resignation, all the data. I don't know if you've been following this recently, but I've talked to colleagues who say, well, yeah, it's employees market, but I think that's going to shift now. You know, there's a recession on the horizon. That's probably going to bring it back to more of an employer's market and so forth. And I just happened to read a report from McKinsey and Company yesterday morning. It says, yeah, not so much. Even if you account for the recession, most recent data out are that I think in that report, this is not higher ed specific. This is in general in the workforce in the U.S. 40% of the workforce considering leaving within the next year. Tom's nodding. You must have seen their same report. That's attention getting in general. But in our field, where, you know, we are continually trying to think about the next, I hope you are, the next wave of leaders in our field, right? If we lose those key people, you know, those up-and-comers because they go somewhere else, where's our bench depth? Where's our institutional knowledge? So strategizing to me is with knowing the situation with your people, with taking care of them, with being attuned to that, and then paying attention to the trends, the research data, the needs. You can set priorities for yourself. Within our leadership team in the Center for Distributed Learning, we had been monitoring this stuff for a while. So as 2021 ended, thankfully, we were talking about what our priorities were for our people. And we talked about making a more positive and people-centered environment. Now, we work at that every day, but we talked about what can we do concretely, right? So that's setting a strategy. And then as 2022 started, we identified that there were some specific things that we could do, but as data continued to manifest about the shifting job market and the folks who were preparing to depart, we realized that we really needed to invest in people. And so I can talk a little bit more about it if you want, but we're devising what we're calling a personnel investment initiative, where we set aside some funds. And we have processes outlined where we account for recognizing exceptional performance in concrete dollars and cents kind of ways. And we anticipate and we prepare for and we actually carry out investing in people to the point that they're more promotable. And when they are promoted, we recognize that with salary increases. And, you know, to ourselves, one of the little mantras that we've said to ourselves is, we're going to make people more promotable here or elsewhere. Now, that's a commitment, right? That means because humanize and empathize is the first step, not the last step, right? So you invest in the person sincerely, authentically, and you know that some of them may go somewhere else, but it's okay. But it's all right, because if you make that a practice, enough people are likely to stay with you and carry out through a sense of loyalty. So I'd be happy to talk about any of those practices if you want, some of those plans that we have. But you know, plans are not enough. You've got to take action. So the third concept that I'll leave you with: humanize and empathize, strategize. But then finally, mobilize, right? We could call this presentation the eyes have it, you know, so humanize, empathize. See what I did there? Thank you. Appreciate that, Mark. What a C. I got a, you know, boom, chick. Taking action and remembering to continually assess how you're doing. Like I mentioned, that developer team that we call Learning Systems and Technologies at the Center for Distributed Learning. We did a lot of work on reclassifying positions, bringing things into better alignment, And we're just a little bit down the road, and someone said, yeah, well, yeah, I don't know. And I start hearing that there's individuals looking for another job. They're still feeling like they're not being paid properly. And I heard that enough. It wasn't just complaining. I mean, I listened and I heard that. And finally, I thought, I need to ask for like a market assessment from HR to see where we are with it. And even though we had just reclassified these people, HR said, oh, yeah, we should probably pay these people more. Thanks a lot. Appreciate that. You know, so then we carry that out. None of that is fast. That's all slow. And forgive me for saying this in a way that is maybe borders on unkind. That's not my intention. But throughout this this last year or so in our work around countering the Great Resignation in our online education professionals, in our work, I have said more than once, well, I really hate that we're doing the work of HR, but if we don't do it, who's going to do it? Because I think we can get tempted, right, to go, well, that's HR's territory, or we think, well, what are you going to do? Our hands are tied, right? No, you have to step back. Part of that strategizing is taking stock of your resources. What is within your sphere of influence? What can you control? And maybe all you can control is work location or a certain amount of flexibility. What you take stock and match that up with what is important to people, right? Now, to some people, only thing that they say matters to them is cold hard cash. And there is a place for cold hard cash. But if that's all that matters, that's never going to be enough. That's never going to be enough. So you go into it knowing that, right? We try to connect with people humanly in terms of their purpose and their passion. We try to churn that up and we connect, but then we don't leave it there. We also match that with the concrete, show me the money kind of situation. You know, I had an opportunity yesterday to watch two people, not in our field, who were really well suited for their jobs. My wife and I went on two tours yesterday while we were here. One was at the Mosaic Center. They do those little red trolley tours around the property. And that guy, his name was Mark also. I don't know if it was with a C or an R.
It better be with a C.
It's hard to say. That's right. It's possible. It's possible. But that guy, I mean, he was passionate. He knew stuff, right? He wasn't just going through the script. I mean, he's like, oh, and this is the part I love, you know, where I just read a book about this, you know, what's happening here and this letters of this person who stayed in this cottage, and we have those, and then we can know something about these people, and it was great. And I thought, this is somebody who is, he is right where he needs to be doing this. He's happy. And then we actually got to do a tour of the hotel property, the resort property here, with You Should Do This. I think it's like Tuesday through Thursday, 2 p.m. Sherry Zocker, I think is her name. She's one of the concierge people here. She does this tour. She's like one of the best in the country. And I'm not making that up. I mean, in 2019, I looked her up. 2019, she was one of the finalists for Historic Hotels of America at doing hotel tours. And it was obvious that in terms of purpose and passion, she was exactly where she needs to be. And that's what we want for all of our people. I'm never going to get in the way of a colleague who wants to pursue something better for themselves. But as a field, we have to do a better job, in my opinion, of connecting to purpose and passion and then actually stepping up and showing in concrete ways the value that we have of our team members. We need to do things like succession planning. We need to do things like capturing institutional knowledge, do oral histories, do interviews, do stay interviews. That takes time. All these things take time. But if we don't get ahead of it and take action, we're going to, a year or two from now, go, well, you know, it's, I remember online learning. That was used to be really good. It was fantastic. Now, starting all over now. And, you know, it's okay. Like, part of your strategy could be partnering with individual companies from our vendor community, Mark with a C. That's a shameless plug. That might work for you.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I do appreciate it.
Yeah. That might work for you. That might be a supplement, you know. You got to find your best way forward. But it's gonna center on, in my opinion, focusing on people and valuing them. We're gonna wrap this up. So here's some related resources. You can snap a photo. You can grab the slide link in a minute and download these yourself. Janet was kind to mention Topcast, the Teaching Online podcast. There are three episodes from Topcast that I think are related somewhat to today's topic. If you want to hear more of that in a conversational manner, plus go to the show notes and there's tons of read more about it resources linked from those three episode pages. I'll mention them quickly. Topcast episode 80 is an interview with Luke Dowden from Texas. Charism in Leading Online Learning Teams. I really appreciate about Luke that he also puts the human face on our work. Episode 109, Protecting Online Higher Education from the Great Resignation, is probably the closest to today, but it's a little different way of carrying it out. 118, Observations on the Online Education Job Market. Janet mentioned that one. And our colleagues at SUNY Oswego, the T for Teaching podcast, have a very important episode that I tell everybody about. It's Preventing Workplace Burnout. And I share it with everybody that I run across, because guess what? All of our people are burning out, and we've got to do something about it. If you haven't been following the trends as much, I would really recommend the results of the quick poll from EDUCAUSE, the Higher Ed Workforce Shakeup. That was around, I want to say maybe that was around March, February or March that came out. And just last week, the CUPA HR Higher Education Employee Retention Survey, their initial results just came out. And I would recommend reading those, that hot off the presses. And spoiler alert, it ain't getting any better. So it's incumbent upon us as leaders to step up and do something about our field.
What?
I know.
It's incumbent upon us. If we don't do it, HR is not going to do it. The president's office isn't going to do it. The provost's office isn't going to do it. It's on us. Act within your sphere of influence. You can't do everything, but you can do something. All right. Here is, I'll leave you this thought. I ran across this Norman Schwarzkopf quote a few years ago. You know, regardless if you have high or low opinions of the former general, I thought this was an interesting quote, and then I throw in my own commentary on it, which I think is maybe more germane to the topic today. He says, "Leadership is a potent combination of strategy and character, but if you must be without one, be without the strategy." My riff on that is how we treat others matters. Maybe it matters even more than what we're trying to accomplish. Now, that may be counterintuitive to some, but we will not have any work if we don't have any people. All right, thanks. You've been a reasonably attentive group. I see that your food is mostly gone. I know you're going to start want to get up and leave here in a minute. That's all my contact info there. Email kelvin@ucf.edu, Twitter kthompso, LinkedIn Dr. Kelvin Thompson. The slides are there again, bit.ly/thompson_DLA22. Feel free to download and make use of them in whatever way you see fit. If you'd like, I'd love to hear from you. Connect with me in any of those venues. I'd be happy to talk. If we have, Janet, any more time before people run to the airport, I'm happy to have a little interaction with any of you, and then we'll be out of here.